Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we have Kelsey Fleming and Josh Diven, both from Pheasants Forever. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
And Jessie Lowry is here, and she will get us started on today's show.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm Jessie Lowry, Director of Conservation and Research here at Blank Park Zoo, and I like to start off the show by setting the stage and talking about the role of a modern zoo in helping to save wildlife. The mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. I like to talk about it as a window to the wild, a place where we can invite the community to come in and see all the amazing animals that we have here at the zoo and get that sense of awe, that warm, fuzzy feeling that we all get. But then as a zoo, how do we turn that feeling of awe into a real conservation action, into something that everybody can do in their own lives that's going to make a difference to wildlife populations, both locally and around the world? And so that's really our job here at Blank Park Zoo, and we do conservation in many different ways. We work to be as green as possible because our day-to-day behaviors and consumption, especially of single-use plastics and disposables, really have a direct impact on wildlife. And that's something easy folks can do at home. We also support and partner with organizations both in Iowa and in places like Namibia and Africa, also in places like Thailand, to help take care of the animals, the wild cousins of the animals that we have here at Blank Park Zoo. We support Giraffe Conservation Foundation and International Rhino Foundation for some of those big charismatic megafauna, is a term that we like to throw around a little bit here at the zoo. But taking care of our local environment is really something, if you want to get the most bang for your buck, taking care of wildlife and natural areas here in Iowa and in the Midwest is really a fantastic way to go. And we do that in a couple different ways. We have a program called Upcycle, where we remove invasive plant species from local parks in partnership with City of Des Moines and Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation and many others. For some examples are honeysuckle and mulberry, and they're kind of taking over the woodlands, as I'm sure many folks are well aware of, and that chokes out the room for the native plants, which is really a building block of the ecosystem here. And another thing that we work on is Plant Grow Fly. It's our pollinator conservation project, where we're working to encourage people to plant pollinator habitat. And whether it's a single pot on your back porch or an entire prairie restoration, which is something we're going to talk about today, everybody can do their part. And pollinators help produce one-third of our global food supply. So go to Blank Park Zoo's website to find out more about that, and we'll talk about that today as well. We've got over 1,000 gardens registered with Plant Grow Fly, and we give you everything you need to know on how to plant a little butterfly garden in your yard. And that's really why we looked to organizations like Pheasants Forever. They're the folks that are out on the front lines here in Iowa and in the Midwest and nationwide, really, working with landowners and other entities on getting that real high-quality habitat in, those building blocks of what used to be here in Iowa. And we know that Iowa used to be covered in over 90% tall grass prairie, one of the most biologically diverse areas in the whole world, and now it's the most converted state in the nation. And so Pheasants Forever is a fantastic partner of Plant Grow Fly and worked with the zoo for many years. And again, I would just like to welcome you, Kelsey and Josh, to the show. So glad to have you here.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Yep, thanks.
So let's get started and talk about first, let's introduce yourself. So Kelsey, tell us just a little bit about yourself and how you ended up at Pheasants Forever.
Okay, awesome. So I grew up on a farm in northwest Iowa. My family's been farming. We've had the land for over 100 years in our family, and I was always in the outdoors growing up. And then I went to Iowa State to get my bachelor's degree, and then went down to Mississippi State to study quail down there. And then from that, I started working for Pheasants Forever in Nebraska. And then a couple years after being there, I came back to my home state of Iowa, and that's where I am now.
That's awesome. We're lucky to have you back here in Iowa.
Thanks.
And Josh, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I guess another farm kid here, guilty of that. So grew up in north central Iowa on a family farm as well. Background, kind of your cliche conservation kid. Grew up crawling around in the woods and the ditches and finding things and bringing them into the house that were not supposed to be in the house, getting in trouble for that frequently. But so always had an interest in the outdoors and conservation from a young age. Wasn't always sure what I wanted to do with it. Ended up at Iowa State University, where I got my degree. Did a couple other jobs following college and throughout college, and actually did a stint at the Henry Dorley Zoo back in that time period. But I've been with pheasants forever now for since 2009.
That's awesome. I'm a farm kid as well. I grew up on a small farm in Madison County, and I think that had a lot to do with, you know, my career now as well. Mm-hmm. We had pigs and cows and cats and dogs, and I had a pony. I had a little pony as well. Lucky to have that. How about you, Ryan? Did you grow up on a farm?
I'm a city boy, but I had a wonderful woods in the back of my house that I used to be able to hang out in.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Pheasants Forever. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the mission of Pheasants Forever?
Okay. So, yeah, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's mission is they're dedicated to the conservation of pheasants, quail, and other wildlife through habitat improvements, public awareness, education, and land management policies and programs. So we're a national nonprofit organization, and that's really what we're after.
Yep, and we're born in the 80s, 1982. That was kind of right there in the coincided with the farm crisis, and it was just a grassroots movement of concerned citizens that had made a correlation between declining habitat out on the landscape and that matching up with decreasing amounts of wildlife, particularly the pheasant, which is our namesake.
And so Pheasants Forever is a national organization, and then does each state have a chapter?
Yeah, so each state has chapters. Iowa, we have currently 103 Pheasant and Quail Forever chapters total. So
that's exciting. And about how many people are involved in Pheasants Forever in Iowa?
We've got about 21,000 members here in Iowa in Pheasants Forever. So,
yep. Iowa's home to the most chapters for Pheasants, Quail Forever in the country. So it jumped down from Minnesota and Iowa really rapidly and was picked up, and it was just it's a different chapter model than any other conservation organizations have. And what's unique about it, it allows those funds that are raised locally, that those individuals on those local chapters get the opportunity to direct those funds locally.
So they can put it to where it really needs to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really exciting. Well, I know through our collaboration with Plant Grow Fly, when I get those calls about how do I, restore prairies and do those larger tracts of land, you guys, as well as the folks at Neil Smith Wildlife Refuge, I know you guys are the experts in this area, and you guys are out there, day in and day out putting this habitat in. So let's talk about why habitat is so important to your organization and exactly what your organization does.
So in addition to our chapters, we also have a farm bill biologist program here in Iowa. The farm bill biologist program with Pheasants Forever started in 2004 in the Dakotas, yeah, with a couple biologists there, kind of a pilot program. And since 2009, we've had a program here in Iowa, and we currently have 12 farm bill biologists on staff. So what our biologists are doing there is that we're working with landowners and helping them achieve their wildlife objectives out on the land and providing technical assistance. And then we kind of know the ins and outs of a lot of the federal, state, and local cost share programs. So we help the landowners navigate through those programs and utilize them if they meet the requirements for those programs.
Yep. Again, it's grown from, I think, 3 or 4 farm bill biologists in South Dakota, and I think we're pushing maybe 125 farm bill biologists across the country right now in 20-plus states. And that was kind of identified as an opportunity early on in working with other agencies and other partners. Some of the ones are, I'm sure, partners to the Plant Grow Fly as well, but USDA and others who are working in delivering some of the farm bill conservation programs at the national level. And in states like Iowa, most folks might be surprised to learn that Iowa is 97% privately owned. And that number around the Midwest is fairly high, in the 90s. And so there's a need to work with the private landowners in those states so that those landowners can be aware of what what opportunities they have, what resources are available to them, and that it was important to have boots on the ground, as we like to call it, out working directly with those landowners, helping them get through the process that is enrolling in a conservation program.
My question for you is, your name, Pheasants and Quail Forever. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing you deal with more animals than just pheasants and quail.
Right, yeah. So, like you said, yeah, we're Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, but really we consider ourselves the habitat organization. So, you know, we work, you know, with landowners that are sending pheasants and quail, but also deer, turkey, your non-game species, your songbirds, pollinators. Really, so we're just after, you know, getting more habitat out there on the land.
Yep, and the neat thing, I mean, with the habitat that, you know, benefits pheasants and quail specifically, there's a whole suite of wildlife that benefit from that habitat type, and it's just native, diverse, high quality habitat.
What is the state of habitat? Are we getting better? Or are we getting worse in the past few years?
Sure, I mean, that's a great question. We, you know, even in, you know, I guess my short time working with PF, we've seen an evolution in what we even define as quality habitat. When CRP, you know, was born in the early 80s, we were pretty excited about switchgrass and alfalfa plantings. And then it was really, really exciting when you figured out how to do cave rock switchgrass, big blue stem, some of the warm season grasses. And we're seeing that evolution in those mixes become more and more diverse. And we're learning all the different benefits associated with replicating. You know, as you mentioned, the tallgrass prairie loss, where there's a lot of benefits to trying to recreate that ecosystem best as we can.
So let's talk about the Farm Bill programs and unpack that a little bit. Talk about what's available to Iowa farmers and what are the differences between the programs.
Kelsey and I were talking about this. It's kind of challenging because some of the manuals for some of these programs are, you know, 2, 3, 4 inches thick. But I think the takeaway is that there's a whole bunch of different programs. There's no less than 42 different CRP programs and configurations. And then in addition to CRP, there's the Wetland Reserve Easement Program. So there's longer term conservation programs. There's a lot of opportunities in there to do a lot of different things. So whether that's a landowner interested in doing a diverse native prairie, restoring maybe a drained wetland up in the prairie pothole region of the state, somebody wanted to do a tree planting, the options are limitless.
So if a landowner particularly wants to help pollinators, what would you recommend?
Right. So right now there's some special money obligated just to, several different programs, but specifically the EQIP program, which is a federal program. Josh, you're pretty familiar with that.
Yeah. So that's EQIP is another one of the ones administered by the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And I guess it gets a little bit confusing, but one of the takeaways is that there's a USDA service center in every single county in the state. That's a great start to, or a place to start for those folks that are interested in learning more about projects. But there's a number of different cost share style programs available. EQIP would fall in to one of those where there's an incentive to offset the cost of a landowner implementing a project. So again, they can be native prairie plantings, they can be tree plantings, they can be wetland restorations. And those usually fall somewhere in that 75% cost share if an individual is successful in applying. But that's something some of our farm bill biologists and you know, it's worth mentioning, the Iowa DNR has private lands staff across the state, as well as the conservation districts of Iowa. And there's a lot more technical resources out there in terms of boots on the ground than people maybe realize.
And so you're matching up the need with the resources and mm-hmm. helping figure out for folks which program they might be able to apply for the cost share, and then also helping them with the technical stuff with how to prepare the site and how to find the seed mix. Do you want to talk a little bit about the specifics of what goes into, you know, improving habitat or starting a new habitat on a piece of land?
Right. So kind of how it starts out, you know, landowner either you know, we have a program and they hear about us from that and come into the office, or they give us a phone call. And what we do is go out and have a site visit with them, determine what their objectives are and what they're wanting out of the land. And then we walk through the different practices involved in getting that type of habitat out there. So if they're wanting to do a native prairie seeding, and they might have some crop ground, or if they have existing grass out there, we talk about either how to set back that grass and then seed it down to native wildflowers and grasses, or if they've got crop ground, how to plant into that as well. And so, you know, we give them the step-by-step. We give them a seed mix and let them know, you know, what species would be great to have out there. And then, you know, we talk about management in the future. Every couple of years, you know, doing a prescribed burn is a great way to help maintain that habitat and keep out invasive species, keep out trees from invading and those sorts of things.
I often get a question of who can burn my prairie. Can you talk a little bit about that and what kind of resources are available, you know, at the county level, at the state level, and how do folks find out more about that?
I'd say the easy answer is anyone that has the training and some equipment to do it safe and a plan, along with some of the, you know, the permits and approvals you need to do some of that. But I think it's important to step back and remember that, you know, this, the ecosystem in Iowa evolved with fire. I think people, you know, we, maybe just as humans, we have a tendency to be afraid of fire and think of all the negative side effects as opposed to some of the benefits of fire. But so prescribed fire is actually great for a lot of these native habitats in the state. And there's contractors that do it across the state. Obviously on public lands, you know, those public lands managers are going to implement fire on those properties. But as far as the private landowner, they can go back into that service center and it's called a contractor list. And they can request that, and that would provide them all the folks that have volunteered or put themselves on that contractor list locally. And that's a good place to start. But I mean, we have recognized a need for more prescribed fire contractors in the state, because a lot of folks are intimidated by fire, and they should be, frankly, just to make sure they're doing it safe. We need more prescribed fire contractors, no doubt.
Let's back up for just a moment and talk about the many benefits that these habitat plots will have for a landowner or for a farmer, maybe in some unfarmable areas. Let's talk about why a landowner would want to be a part of this program.
Some of the, you know, compounding benefits of these habitats, you know, it's, we talk about wildlife, we talk, you know, about aesthetics, or, you know, one thing that maybe doesn't get mentioned enough, although it's been in the press here recently in the state of Iowa recently, is you talk about soil and water benefits of those perennial covers. I've heard you talk, Jesse, in some of your other podcasts about, you know, these deep-rooted perennials that water infiltration and some of the benefits they have there. So those are some other ones. There's also a huge opportunity to install some of this habitat and identify areas within a field that are, whether they're unprofitable because they're, you know, they're wet or they're light sandy soil where the crop burns up in summer. So if you come at it from that angle, it's a different conversation, you know, with a producer who at the end of the day is trying to, you know, improve his bottom line and make sure he has a profitable business. So if we can identify areas within the state of Iowa that offer opportunities like that, so it's kind of a win-win situation. We can provide some space for pollinators, monarchs, wildlife, and you get the added bonus of some soil and water benefits as well. Not to mention taking some of those areas out of crop production that guy's losing money on. Mm-hmm. So that's low hanging fruit for us. Mm-hmm. And that's, Kelsey, I don't know if you want to talk about, we actually have a person in the state here that works with producers specifically to identify those, we call them red areas for some opportunities.
Yeah. So out in the southwest part of the state, he's out of Council Bluffs. His name is Jeremy Biggs, and he's a precision ag business planning specialist, long title there. But yeah, exactly like Josh said, you know, he's working with landowners and looking at yield maps and, you know, talking about their inputs and basically making sure that, you know, if there's areas they're losing money, what they can do to get those areas back up so that, you know, they're making money and, you know, doing well with their operation.
Yeah, we like the term, you know, precision conservation, or farm the best and conserve the rest.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
And you mentioned monarchs, and monarch is actually in your title. I'm so jealous. And we know that in order to save the monarch butterfly, we're going to have to be putting habitat in places everywhere, unfarmable areas and ditches and backyards and churchyards. So talk about, your job title and what Pheasants Forever can do to help save the monarch butterfly.
Sure. PF and QF, before we even knew we were doing it, or before we were marketing in that way, we've been installing, pollinator and monarch habitat across the Midwest. We were doing that, as we mentioned earlier, through advocating for and helping landowners install this native diverse habitat, which frequently included species like milkweed, and as most folks know now, is a host plant for the monarch butterfly. So here, more recently, it's unfortunate that it coincided kind of with the decline of the monarch as things really started to taper off in 2014 when the monarch had the lowest overwintering population that it's had on record. But so PF decided to, there was an opportunity to step in and help deliver some of this habitat, and also work with some of the partners we mentioned earlier to refine some of these programs that we're involved in delivering, and make improvements here and there where we could to get further benefit to the monarch. So that's in a nutshell kind of some of the things I work with, and I also work with our Farm Bill biologists and biologists in Iowa and other states to make sure that we're planning for monarchs in our projects and every opportunity we can.
Do you have any specific stories you could tell us of a situation where there was a bad environment that is now a lot better?
Well, I think, in talking about some of the, different financial conservation programs we have, sometimes those motivators are more financial. And we've certainly all worked with folks where they've implemented a project because, use the example of where we're targeting some unprofitable farmland, and that was their primary objective. Fast forward a couple of years down the road, and that habitat is starting to show some maturity and starting to look better and become established, that original participant we worked with, who maybe never had a wildlife objective, or that wasn't why they did a project, actually have kind of come full circle, and they really appreciate that project for other reasons as well. So we've seen that before. I think that's kind of a neat one. Or where we've worked with a gentleman, maybe to work some more diverse habitat into a project, and they weren't sure about all those flowers in the mix that we were recommending, so they put it in the backside of the farm way back away from the road, and take 3-4 years down the road, they came in and were wishing that they'd actually done it closer to the road so that the neighbors could see the flowers, because instead of being ashamed of them, they're actually really proud of them.
So what are some of the stumbling blocks that folks have when they're maintaining this habitat? What do you wish that folks would do a little bit better or know from the beginning?
I think I heard this phrase from you, Jesse, on an earlier podcast, and I'm going to steal it. I think you had 3 years of describing a native habitat planting, and it was sleep, creep, and leap.
That's right.
Years 1, 2, and 3. Yep. I like that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So
stole it too. So
okay,
you have my permission.
Secondhand robbery. I really like that because I think one of the biggest hurdles or pitfalls we see is, because some of the folks we work with are really excited to get this habitat out there, and they see pictures of this restored native prairie, and it's there's beautiful flowers, and it's blooming all season long, and then they implement their own project, and they need to just manage their expectations a little bit, because these projects are slow to mature, and they're kind of hairy looking the first year. And we've seen people where they actually think something failed or didn't go right, and they will, end up destroying or damaging that cover because they need to be patient and let those new plants come on.
And I found that it doesn't matter if you're talking to backyard gardeners or folks that want to do larger tracts of land, that you really just have to have that shift in mindset from traditional gardening, that it's going to look a little bit different and you need to talk to your neighbors, you know, and if you're, especially if you're planting from seed, maybe you need a little sign talking about how this is habitat for pollinators. And it's just that shift in mindset from traditional gardening, but that it's really going to pay off.
Yep. Well, you know, I think the other, and just to, you know, feed on that, yeah, these plantings take, you know, 2 to 3 years to really start to look good. But you got to remember that with proper management, you know, they're perennial planting. So either, it can be 10, 20 years. I mean, you're going to get, they got a long shelf life if they're managed properly.
And another good thing to think about, too, if you ever have questions, feel free to, you know, reach out to your local USDA office. Every county in Iowa has one. And if there's not a PF biologist in one of those counties, there's, you know, soil conservationists in the office. There's DNR biologists. There's Conservation Districts of Iowa staff. So there's a lot of different people out there to help you. So if you've got questions, don't hesitate to ask. Bring in a picture of a plant. You know, we love to get out in the field and help out. So.
Okay, so as the resident city guy here, do you have any programs or ideas for those that live in the city that don't have as much land but still want to help out habitat?
Well, I think the habitat can look, essentially is the same. It's just on a different scale. So, you know, I know Jesse has talked in earlier podcasts about, you know, the decision a landowner makes, you know, if they've got a 10 by 10 versus, I mean, some of the projects we work on are 1,000 times bigger than that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the feasibility of doing something like plugs isn't there, you know, so we're looking seed. But again, my point being really, so long as you're conscious about the area you're going to establish that habitat in, you know, the soils and the species you select. But as far as programs go, I mean, the programs we have sometimes are a little bit larger scale projects. So, I mean, we may be working projects down to a couple acres in size, mm-hmm. but again, my point being the fundamentals are the same, more or less. It's just on a different scale.
Do you think people are finally starting to think about milkweed in a little different way? And have you had that reaction? I've had a reaction from a lot of landowners who just can't believe that I'm proposing that people put milkweed in.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of landowners out there you're meeting with, and you show them the plan you have of what species to plant out there, and they see milkweed, and, you know, sometimes they're a little thrown off, and then they're like, well, you know, the monarch really does need that, and, you know, it's not as bad as it used to be, and you see a lot more milkweed in the ditches and, you know, on homesteads, people mowing around them and keeping them there. So I think the message is getting out there, and people know how important milkweed is.
How do people find out more about your programs?
So we've got a website, www.iowapf.net. So we've got our list of programs up there. And then what we've also got up there is a list of our biologists and staff. So you can find out where we work. And again, we don't cover all the counties in Iowa. So you can contact your local, your closest farm bill biologist, and they can put you in the right direction. We've got a lot of partners that can help you out and help with the same programs that we have. So.
Thank you. We're just getting ready to sign out. I just wanted to say again, thank you guys for all the work that you do with habitat restoration. You guys are doing awesome work. We're so proud to partner with you and to partner with the wider hunting community as well. Those are the folks that are out there in the land, you know, working to conserve it. So we're just delighted to be a part of it. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Thanks a lot. And if you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, go to our website, blankparkzoo.com, and check out all our fun social media channels as well. And we'll see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.